This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All right. Okay. For those who just joined us, thank you. So whether the MCO ends on April 14 or whether it gets extended, businesses need to survive. If you've been listening to Voices of SMEs Empowering Through the Pandemic on BFM, we've heard how some companies have innovated and bandied together to survive. So today's topics are the race to recovery and the kind of mindsets and steps we can take in our race to recovery. Joining me today, we have Joshua Liu, the CEO of Espresso Lab Asia, Datuk Munira Lui, the CEO of Brand International, and Tan Kiam Hock, founder of Alliance Cosmetics. He's a serial entrepreneur and a veteran in business, and they'll be sharing their thoughts and strategies on how we can move forward. Maybe we can just start off with your views of the recent stimulus package. We'll start with you, Dato.
Well, I believe the last stimulus package augurs well for a lot of SMEs. At least the SMEs do see a light in the tunnel. So now the situations would be, the real challenge is how do the SMEs is able to access to those funds and grants fast. Yeah. So now we have what we call the B40, the M40, the small and the micro enterprise, plus the SMEs are essentially taken care of. So perhaps it's actually time to focus on the plight of the mid-tier companies, right? Something that we need to, hopefully the government will be able to focus on that, because the mid-tier companies essentially employ certainly more than 200 people, and the average workforce salary, it's certainly above 4,000. So it'd be good to be able to see something that can be done to support this mid-tier companies as well.
Okay. Yeah. Joshua, you represent, I guess, the SMEs and all the cafes, because you supply, to supply coffee as well to other companies. So what have you been seeing? What do you think of this package?
Well, we're grateful to the government at least for listening, especially in the second round. I guess there was a lot of the word is outcry lah, and it's like, hey, what's happening? You know, what are you all doing for the business? And there was a lot of lobbying. And to their credit, they were willing to listen. And so the two main things, I mean, speaking from a small business perspective, the two main things were addressed, which is wage subsidy has gone up. But rentals, as we expected, rentals were not. They can't mandate, so they will have to encourage. But it gives us a tool to negotiate with landlords, and rentals are clearly some of the biggest chunks of fixed costs for us small businesses. Yeah. So yes, we're happy with that. But clearly, like Datuk said, more can be done and more should be done.
Okay, Mr. Tan.
Two issues. One is cash flow or liquidity available to SMEs. And I think the moratorium done by Bank Negara has been fantastic. Okay. Right? And then they put forward all these loans. How are the SMEs going to assess these loans is another question. Okay? Yeah. So I hope they smoothen the implementation. They allow more. At the moment, it looks nice, but access to it is going to be difficult. If we look at it from past experience, okay. Second thing will be the wage subsidy, which we expected more, right? Because the MCO is a complete lockdown, zero sales. So most countries, they look at the during the lockdown period, like Singapore, straight away they know they're going to lock down for the 1 month. They straight away offer 75% to every company. Okay, and that is not sufficient. That's not enough. But they have allowed unpaid leave. They have allowed annual leave, and to be incorporated into it. So there's some room and leeway to play. But I still see that the private sectors will have to do pay cuts across the board, right? Mm-hmm. Because you only have a 6-month window in terms of cash flow. Yeah. So we'll talk about more of that later, on that one. Yeah, that's my take.
Joshua, you know, in your case, right, we talk about your respective business, right? You know, what was the impact, I guess, journey to your business, which is very retail? We'll get to you, Dato' Munira, because yours is a business that goes across the region. But Joshua, you know, how has this impacted your business personally?
Well, our own business, we operate a chain of coffee shops, retail coffee shops. So clearly, we are allowed to open as an essential service, but I don't see many people considering coffee so essential, to break the MCO to go. So we've decided to actually not operate at all because we realized the OPEX to continue operating during such times way more than whatever collection we will get. So just to give the staff some rest and things like that. So clearly, what is on our mind is wages, lah. You know, how are we going to pay those wages? That helped with the wage subsidy, which we're still calculating. Then on the rental side, now I guess I see a lot of landlords are starting to come back and start to say, hey, okay, let's see how we can help each other. Because you see, from a retail standpoint, you don't want the malls to be empty in 6 months from today, right? So that is what is happening to me. So, but not all are like me that decide not to operate. A lot of them have to continue operating by takeaways and deliveries and stuff like that. But we also have heard news about delivery commissions eating into the margins. So they are doing all that for nothing, you see. So they may have to question whether they want to continue opening or not, you know.
Right. And you employ how many people?
We have, we are quite lean in a sense that, maybe I'll share a little short story, very short. In a sense that 3 to 5 years ago, Espresso Lab actually went through a situation like COVID-19 due to our own mistakes. Okay, we made some wrong decisions and we went through tough times. Already, we are starting to question ourselves. Hey, let's do something about it. Let's change, you know. And then in 2018, after starting to clean up the company and recovering, 2019 was very good for us. So when we hit this 3 months, it's not specifically for us. Hey, I say, hey, this is not unfamiliar territories. We've been through tough times like that. So what we did was then I actually cut down on a lot of staff. When I say cut down, it means I'm just making the existing staff much more productive. We've been questioning, hey, why do we need 3 to 5 people in a cafe working the rounds? Why can't we do with 2, right? You know, rentals, why don't we go to places where it makes sense, you know, maybe on in terms of variables, let the rental be a variable of your revenue rather than a fixed cost. So we've gone through a lot of that the past 3 years. So when we hit this now, I see a lot of F&B companies going through what we used to go through. And that I understand. I truly understand what they are going through. And so maybe it gives me an opportunity to share what we went through and what we learned during those tough times.
Right. Yeah. So you went through a risk management on your own already. So some practices and contingency in that sense. Dato' Munira, your business, you employ more than about 800 staff. How has your business been impacted because of this?
Well, Brands International Primary, it's a business process outsourcing company. We specialize very much in both front as well as back office services, primarily in the areas of customer management, HR, finance as an IT help desk, and we support the whole APAC markets as well. So today we have about 800 workforce, and we are kind of pretty fortunate in the sense that most of our projects are actually is a 2 to 3 years contracts. So essentially the revenue is protected. So what it's really a pressing issue for us, it's really about moving into a work from home environment. So we're kind of fortunate because we actually started our digital transformation journey way back last year, about 18 months ago. And what we essentially has done then is we have started to migrate all our core systems, including HR, finance, into the cloud situation. And we have also started to move from a digital into a digital workforce environment, whereby we have actually started to implement robots to actually take over some of the mundane jobs that the humans are actually performing in this case here. So with that digital transformation initiative that we have started earlier, it actually helps to facilitate our efforts to actually move into a work from home environment. Mm-hmm. So we understood the dynamics and the landscape that was actually already happening in China. We actually activated our BCP plan way back in February, where we were already deliberating on all the scenarios that could happen. And actually, MCO was actually one of those scenarios that we have identified. So the first week of March itself, 30% of our workforce has already started to work from home as part of the preventive measures. And 1 week before MCO, 50% of our workforce was already working from home. And on the day when the MCO kicks in, 100% of our people were already working from home. So we are thankful that, you know, there were a lot of legal work that has already been done much, much earlier as part of the pre-planning here.
Okay, let's talk about cash flow. So Thiam Ho, you wrote an article in The Star a few days back, cash flow and monthly operating costs are key for survival. If you haven't got hold of that article, please do. But you offer some suggestions. Let's talk about cash flow. What were some of the suggestions you discussed in the article?
Basically, what you do is with the moratorium, you have a six-month window, right? If you look at the COVID situation, nobody knows when is normal business going to start. And even if MCO is lifted, what kind of business sales is going to be as people are scared to go out, you know. So you expect to sales to drop 50% from normal, at least. Those who are in exports and everything, you know, plantations and everything, they are all right, okay? But the F&B sector, the consumer product sector, the retail distribution business are all going to be badly affected. And it's a very slow recovery, yes. Right.
Yeah.
I would think that if we can get COVID under control, earliest actually road to recovery will start next year. Right. It won't be this year. But for SMEs, the first 6 months is the most crucial because you've already been given the moratorium, you know, breathing space. So how do you survive for the next 6 months with your existing cash flow that you have? So my topics were few things on the cash flow was the most important thing is the cash reserve that you have. All right. Not all SMEs have deep pockets. The older SMEs, of course, they have learned from the past experiences, you know, in terms of recessions and everything. So they would have more reserves in hand and they will know how to stretch for the next 6 months. So I don't worry about them. But 50 to 60% of the SMEs have very little cash reserves. So what are the tips, you know, that you need to have, right, to survive and make sure you get through the 6 months? You're definitely going to lose money, okay, if you don't get your operating expenses down. So how much money are you going to lose? Every month that you lose money, you pay salaries, you pay rentals and everything, it's going to eat into your cash reserves, correct? So you have to minimize your losses. You have no choice, okay, if you want to last all the way to 6 months. SMEs will now, with the easy granting of loan, and if they are able to assess the loan, it will only help to finance the losses, right? At the end of 6 months, you not only face the existing loans of the moratorium, you have new loans. I guarantee you, you have no cash reserves at the end of 6 months, and you will use the loans to pay for the reserve, for the losses. You'll become insolvent. So in 6 months' time, you have a lot of bankruptcies, right? Not because the business is not viable, but you just have no cash and you have to pay back the banks, correct? So that's why I emphasize a lot on managing your cash reserves right now. And some of the things that you can do is, of course, the wage subsidy, right? Luckily, the new ruling, which is not very clear yet, is that you can utilize unpaid leave. You can utilize annual leave, unpaid annual leave. You can use the annual leave. You can also do pay cuts. As long as you do not retrench the staff for the next 6 months. That means for those staff that you want to claim, that's below 4,000. Anything above 4,000, I'm telling all my companies, let's do a pay cut immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, do it for 3 months, let's see how it goes. And then from there, we decide again in June, right? So you preserve some cash flow. EPF, we have been fighting like crazy to defer, to exempt payments of EPF, right? Companies with poor cash reserves have no money to pay EPF. They will pay the salary and they will owe EPF for sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And last recession happens, okay? Many companies could not afford to pay the EPF because they had to pay the salaries first, the rental first to keep going, you know, hoping that things will turn around, right? And then finally, when they go insolvent, you don't pay EPF anyway. Right, EPF will come and sue you and whatever it is, but that'll take a long time, right? And they're going to have hundreds of thousands of companies not paying EPF. So why don't we exempt payment for EPF for 6 months? You know, that's the question I've been asking the government. They can't do that to the... Now we have to do higher pay cuts, all right, to supplement for the EPF, you know? So, wage subsidy helps, but it's 3 months. You need to survive for 6 months. So if you're, you know, on the ratio, some companies like, you know, KL companies, a lot of people earning more than 4,000. So the proportion of the 30%, you know, the below 4,000 wages, the claims are minimal. So it's maybe it gives a 5% or 10% subsidy to your total payroll. Correct? So it doesn't really, you know, maybe for manufacturing, maybe for F&B, you have a lot of local staff making 2,000-3,000 a month. Those are the people that is very useful. You know, it's a higher percentage of the wage subsidy to the company. But it's 3 months. So you have to divide by two, right? The subsidy, which means it reduces from 30%, let's just say for your case, down to 15% over 6 months. Right. So then you have to re-look at your budget again and say, okay, how much do I need to cut in terms of pay, right, to survive? If my business drops by 50%, 60%, 70%, right? 70% for, you know, even if you drop by 50%, for sure you're going to lose money because there's no way you're going to cut so much from them. Your staff needs to survive, right? So it's going to be eating into your cash reserves on that.
Okay.
And the deferred payment, EPF payment, one more issue. The deferred is mentioned, okay? But you have to apply to EPF. This is another ridiculous situation. 500,000 companies applying to EPF says, can I defer EPF payment? What do you think is the processing rate? You know? Brainless, you know. Anyway. Rental subsidy, private sector is always difficult, right? Because everybody have their own problems.
Very difficult.
Yeah. But I have a belief that, you know, especially the Chinese community, we have been surviving on helping one another in times of crisis. I've seen it happen over and over again, right? And I believe the, at least the Chinese landlords, you know, not the corporate landlords, the Chinese landlords will come in and support. I'm telling you that is true, okay?
I beg to differ, but never mind, go ahead.
No, but I look at Mid Valley, right? Okay. Straight away, they give you 2 months, March and April.
They are corporate.
Corporate. Yeah, but it's very Chinese thinking, okay?
Okay.
Right? I know the Tan family, so they always will come out and support us, okay? I'm not saying Sunway, right? Jeffrey Chow was the first to come out to support, okay? And the last one is the moratorium, right? I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Right? And it also helps to save our banking system. Because if 30% goes NPL, right, none of you can operate. Okay, the banking system will collapse. So I think it was a great move by Bank Negara. So that's
we have some smart people. We do have some smart people in Bank Negara, right?
Yes,
well,
we do.
I think they have to protect the banking system, lah. They have to protect the banking system, lah. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You gonna say something, Dato? Okay.
No.
You know, one of the things that you wrote about as well, you were saying in corporate tax, Tiam Hock, you said for companies that will definitely declare a loss in 2020 to write into the IRB now, right, that you will declare zero profits for 2020 and suspend all tax payments of future projected profits. So, you know, so that's one thing to write into IRB now and say that, you know, it will be a loss.
Yeah. I mean, for those of you who are sure, not all companies are going to lose money. Correct. Okay. But those of you know for sure, you know you're going to lose money, just write in and say that, you know, can I defer, you know, this payment, because it's based on projection from last year. So, and the IRB rules are that you cannot project more than less than 75% or 85% of your profits from
They suspended this rule. In the stimulus, they actually suspended this rule. They say you can write in, and even if you are off, no penalties for this particular year. So I paid attention to this particular issue. Yeah.
So I'm just advising everybody to write in.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And why loan the money to the government in a sense?
Okay. Right. This is a question from Michael to Dato' Munira. So how's the BPO industry impacted by the immigration lockdown and foreign workers? Is that a case for you?
Oh, well, we are kind of fortunate because most of the foreign knowledge workers that we have are already operating on a valid permits and so on and so forth. Thanks to MDEC, we have also been liaising very closely with MDEC, one of our key agencies that we work with. And there were some leeway in terms of how we actually process work permits, as well as, the extension of work permits and all that. So we're kind of managing the situation at this point. So no glaring concerns from my perspective.
Okay. So Tiam Hock, you spoke about this and you also wrote this in an article about people working together, business partners working together. So Joshua, you together with about 1,000 F&B operators, right? There was a loose group of people or businesses, Malaysian F&B Operators Alliance, you spoke to EAC and then of course some things got through. How else are you guys working together moving forward?
As a F&B community, we all understand clearly very well what our specific challenges are. So, of course, whatever we can do to trim costs, we have already done to the best of our ability to trim costs. But the other side is to get more revenue, lah. So you want to get more revenue without increasing your variable costs as well, right? So we've been trying to help each other share because the F&B community has a large social media following collectively. So then there is a lot of cross-sharing, cross-branding, cross-selling various products. I want to thank a lot of corporates have approached me and they actually say, hey, I heard you have an alliance. Would you, what can I do for the F&B people? You know, can I list this on an e-commerce site? I want to thank Astro, GoShop. I want to thank, there are quite a number of them. They came out and they said, okay, how can we help the F&B community? Because especially the small ones, they are really, really affected. They are just going through day by day. I'm sure you have seen the viral story about the chicken rice seller who, I think Malay Mail carried that and they are doing like 100 ringgit a day and they could just go down just like that, you know. So what we have been doing is coming together as a group. This is an informal group, by the way. First thing we did was we said, hey, let's speak to the government. This was prior to Prihatin Tambahan. So we say, hey, let's write in. So we managed to write in, secured a Zoom meeting with the finance minister, specifically laid out what are the issues and the challenges faced by the FMB community. And we want to thank him. Like he listened specifically on wage subsidy and especially delivery costs, which they said they will do something about it. So we did that. I think there's a lot of cross-selling going on, forward selling. I think Faith has been helping on forward selling. I think Chen Chow came on came on BFM a couple of days ago.
Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of initiatives are done by technology and e-commerce companies to help us forward sell some of this. So that helps what Tiam Hock is saying about cash flow. You know, we're taking future revenue upfront first to keep us going. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah. Think of subscriptions. This is a question to from Warren to Tiam Hock, but I guess everybody else can chip in as well. So online business is booming. I don't know if it's booming, but online business, right? Brick and mortar companies seem to be coming to an end. How can we evolve? And
brick and mortar will not die. So, you know, but you can see the online business growing fast at a faster rate now. Yes. But don't forget that everything is intertwined. Yeah. If the brick and mortar business goes down, doesn't mean that everything is picked up by the internet business, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get no suppliers. The suppliers cannot survive. So you have less products online. You know, all kinds of things happen. And only thing is, if the whole economy goes up, then, you know, everybody will go up and the internet will, just the online business will just go up faster.
Yeah. Right?
So, but you can see the benefits of online now. Mm. Right? This is something that we talked about 2 years ago, 3 years ago already, that we should go on omni-channels, right? For a lot of distribution companies, we have, yeah, supposed to go on omni-channels and everything. So 2-3 years ago already, we were talking about that.
People are now finally taking it seriously.
Yeah. When this channel is blocked, at least you have another channel to go, right? So,
Okay, Dato' Munira, so you've been in business for 16 years, right? And you've also gone through ups and downs, the GFC and all that. You know, maybe you can, what were the measures you put in place? I guess it was a lesson learned probably in 2003 that you actually, you know, took and in preparation for this, but maybe some of the things that you did in place, because, you know, you were definitely an SME when you first started.
Yeah. Well, our first impact was actually the financial crisis way back in 2007-2008 situation. Yes. Yeah. So our immediate, on the reflection of what we did, primarily was, I think one came to our mind was really about sustainability. And it echoes similar to what we are currently facing at this point of time. It's really about how do I stay afloat, yeah? Mm. And from our perspective was really not just about the, you know, the cash flow situation, but really about how to change the whole business model in terms of how we operate. During that time when we started, we were very much a consulting company, and it was very much a piecemeal revenue kind of a revenue stream. So we don't have what we call a continued revenue stream that takes us to 1 year, 2 years, and so forth. So the new business model that evolved from our business was really about, okay, why don't we go into the managed services or outsourcing business? Because that business was essentially identifying, coming up with an idea to ride on the wave. Mm. And at that stage, during that recession, cost management, consolidation was the way to go globally itself. Yes. So, and obviously, outsourcing became a very strategic intent and a strategy for a lot of organizations itself here. So I guess the learning from our side was very much having that mindset of, you know, how to stay relevant. It's about being adaptable, being agile to move and switch the model and offer services essentially that, you know, that will meet the pain points at that moment of time itself here. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, you know, our revenue actually increased by 200% for the year. And subsequently, obviously, it's important to continuously innovate, deploying technology in what we do, as I've shared as part of our digital transformation earlier.
Okay, Tiam Hock, you also talk about monthly operating costs. What are some of the measures that companies can take right now?
Monthly operating costs basically is how much profits and loss you've got to make, right? And I suggest that everybody really look into the reforecasting of the budget, the P&L, monthly P&L, especially if you don't have recurring income, right? It's very, very difficult because sales is dropping off the cliff. So you have to do testing of 30, 40, 50% drop in sales, 60%, 70% drop in sales. And then look at your cost of goods. That's what I was talking about. You know, looking at net sales after cost of goods. And then from there, you see your operating expenses and how much, you know, losses you can take if the sales drop this and that. Because by the end of 6 months, you have to make a decision whether it's going to be viable for you. You know, even now, some businesses, if you look at it, it's no point opening the shop, even after MCO. Yeah. Okay? So for me, might as well save the money, save the losses, you know? Right?
Yeah.
And just put everybody on a long-term, annual leave or whatever it is. I don't know. You know, unpaid leave or whatever it is. But it's no point. Yeah. Right? They might as well save this day. On the rental issue, you know, like I said earlier, talk to your landlord. I'm sure they will help you 20-30%, even for offices, right? I extended, you know, I have a few tenants. I just extended for office space. I just extended 20%, even way before this, right? In March itself, I already extended this thing, and it starts from April. So it's 20% for 3 months, right? Without them asking. Then now the announcement of 30% more if there's double deduction on tax treatment. Mm, now they're coming back to me and says, can you give me 30% instead of 20%? Right? But that's fine. I mean, you know, it's workable. Okay? Even with the double deduction, if I give them the 10% more, I still lose another 4%. Okay? I can only claim back 6% on the total rental rebates. But it's fine. Right, I can take it because I have a moratorium on the property loans. Yeah. Right, I don't need to pay for the next 6 months, so my cash flow is okay. But my condition is you pay on time, because I have to save to pay the banks. You know, I'm paying bank interest on these things. Yeah. So this is the win-win situation for both sides, right? So make sure that you have sufficient cash flow to pay your landlord if they give you the discounts.
Yeah.
Right.
So landlords out there who's listening to this, please learn from Tiam Hock. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. The EMP.
Yes. Yeah. EMP.
We all need that very badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
EFM.
Just media. This is from personal experience from previous few recessions. And we actually spend more during the recession, right, for our cosmetic business. And we actually spend more. And also, for the same amount of spending that you have, the media companies were willing to give you more. So sometimes even half price, double the you know, the advertising space, so to speak, right? Everybody helped everybody survive. But what I did realize was when we spend more or we spend more than competitors, right? Because it's all on sales, ma.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If it's on cost, you have to cut down as much as possible. But on anything that helps you create sales, right? This is what you need most. Then you should be spending on it, you know? So, then the media companies will, of course, be more than happy to help you, right?
Yeah.
Or else they won't survive anyway. So,
yeah.
If you all must know, Yahoo is a shareholder in BFM.
Underlying threats.
Let's do a butter trade. I pay in beans.
The other thing is on monthly operating expenses, you know, all these allowances and everything during the good times, fine, you know. And the office expenses and everything. So during bad times, you know. But I think this COVID problem won't go away for the next 6 months. So we do need to spend some money for the staff, right? Whether it's face masks, hand sanitizers, you know, and all these things to help them, you know, go through the next 6 months. Because it will be a norm, right? It's like Hong Kong, where you'll be wearing a face mask, you know, day in, day out, you know, when you go out to work and everything. So we have to get used to that. So we myself translate some of these expenses into preserving the health of the staff, right?
Yeah.
Lastly, on wages. Not all companies perform badly, okay, during this thing. For sure, the MCO period is going to be bad. Some companies will pick up faster than others, right? But generally, you can say that we are going to face a massive slowdown over the next 6 months, probably to the end of the year. Can we convert the wages to a certain extent to what you call flexible wages, variable? Okay? Instead of a fixed cost, becomes a variable cost, right? But you can't go completely variable. It's not like a factory where you can say piecemeal, you know, you do how many pieces, I pay you how many pieces. So it should be what you call a base plus variable, right? So your basic, let's just say it's $100, right? $20, $30, it becomes variable. Give them the survival. For the seniors, maybe they can take a bit more variable, you know, percentage of variables, right? So if you have a good month, you pay them. Pay them back the original salary, you know. To me, that works, right? And the staff will be more, even more supportive of the company activities. You know, everybody is involved in selling the selling the products and stuff like that. So that might work, I think. You know, that might work.
It's about, I guess, in having an honest conversation and situation. We know we're all in it. And knowing that at least you still have work. Because it's going to be an issue if you lose people now. And when business picks up, you got to find people again. Yeah. So, it's...
Takes time to train people, right? To get them used to your company culture and system and everything.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about leadership and the kind of message that you're sharing with your employees. But before that, here's a question from Jonathan. He said, I'm concerned businesses are taking loans and delaying the inevitable for 6 months. Then post that, they'll rack up more debt. Then bankruptcy will go up. So what are the business model changes to overcome this? And I guess it's a question about innovation and pivoting and all that. So it's a question addressed to all who would like to try that. Or maybe I'll get you to... Joshua, to think about, you know, how we need to think differently.
Yeah, well, we all need to know the nature of our own businesses. So we, as entrepreneurs, if there's no point going down the road, just bite the bullet, live and fight another day. But if there is some glimmer of hope in the form of evidence, data, numbers, as well as anecdotal evidence that, hey, we can write this out after 6 months, things will improve, then it makes sense to take those loans. Like Kiam Hong said, those loans are meant to finance your losses, you see. So really, you have to seriously ask yourself, hey, do I want to get into a loan just to pay for losses? Might as well cut losses now itself, right? Having said that, we went through that, like I said earlier, we went through that a couple of years earlier. So now, I truly empathize with what some of the people in my industry are going through, because I can see the same thing happening. So I guess it takes pragmatism. Don't be so in love with that business or that brand even, or that thing. And if you know, we are entrepreneurs by nature, let's do something. If we can't do this, let's, instead of pivoting, stop it, look for another thing to do. That's my gut feel at the moment.
Anybody, any other comments? If not, this is another very interesting question. It's from Wicket to Kiam Hock, but again, anyone else can come in and chip in. Would you suggest for some businesses to merge with their competitors?
Two thoughts about that. One is, if you are, it's just like war, right? You know, you have, let's just say, three kingdoms. You have three, four parties here. And who's the strongest? The strongest will not merge with the weaker. For sure. Right? Because you die, and I take over. Right? The two weakest one will merge. But there's no strength. where I don't see the strength, you know, coming up from there when you merge two weak ones. In fact, you would drag one another down, right? So you need to have strong injection, I would rather, of cash, right? So if the big one say, okay, I will take over your company, not just merging, but I will take over your company and I will help you right through the period, then it works. If not, I suggest you look for somebody rich, another corporation that's rich, your VC funds or whoever, to ask them to inject cash. That's the cleanest way of, and you still retain control of the company to a certain extent, you know. That would be my advice.
Any other comments from the other panelists?
Maybe your alliance, you know, of F&B. Yeah. Yeah.
Merge is a nice way of saying I take you over. I take over your company, you know, so what's in it for me? But there are, I mean, like, just to add to what you said, Tiam Ho, the weaker company may have something that the stronger company wants. The price is right, instead of building that whatever advantage that is, acquisition of that advantage may be a win-win, but then it always has to be a case-to-case scenario. No blanket advice on this.
I think. Strong will eat the weak.
But you know, there's such thing as what we say is the smart partnering, right? It's if there is a potential JV or M&A that's going to happen, it has to be a strategic. It has to be as a strategic intent, which means both parties essentially can add value and combine together, it becomes stronger. So I guess you know, that are considerations that, you know, need to be looked at when we talk about, you know, collaboration, because there's no way we can, in this kind of times, to be able to survive.
She froze. Okay, she froze. Okay, my next question, I hope she'll be back soon, but...
Okay.
Yeah, okay, you're back. I'm back. You were halfway saying something.
Yeah, I don't know what I said. Well, basically, okay. Essentially what I'm saying is that, you know, smart partnering is probably the way to go at this stage, because we can't probably survive alone in today's environment, in the current environment. So the question now here is, you know, as what Joshua said, you can't be sentimental with what you do, but the ability to be able to look at the bigger picture, you know, in terms of survival at this point.
Okay. Yeah. Here's a question from Michael to you, Dato. Is outsourcing now relevant in an age when citizens cannot move between borders? Does that make sense?
Sorry, again the question. You're giving me a lot of difficult questions.
is outsourcing now relevant? Must be a competitor. In an age where citizens cannot move between borders.
Well, I would look at outsourcing as potentially a strategy for companies who are kind of need to build new capabilities. Like this for SME. I mean, the voice that we are saying, telling the SMEs today, it's go digital, all right? We know that there are also a lot of technology providers out there who's giving free subscriptions to all these SMEs so that they can actually go digital itself. But in the absence of a real digital strategy, it's not going to be sustainable in this case, all right? So that having said that, we're also saying that outsourcing could potentially be a strategy for customers or clients who may want to, you know, go digital, but they do not have the capabilities, they do not have the infrastructure to be able to do this. And speed is essence in terms of survival at this stage. So essentially, outsourcing could be the route to some of the potential current pains that you have at this point. But if you were to just look at globally as well as the APAC perspective, we now even have technology that actually allows us to actually do voice chats, you know, in multiple language to be able to support whatever countries that we are supporting at this point of time. So this is where the speed of adoption of new technologies becomes very key towards the survival of any BPO companies at this point.
Right. I think very interesting, like the point that Joshua made earlier, you know, to be lean and mean when it was not called for, when it was not necessary, but to start thinking lean and mean, even especially during good times, right? I mean, an earlier point. I want to talk about, at the end of the day, it's still about our customers, right? How are you keeping your customers engaged at the moment? You know, Dato, Joshua, how are you keeping them engaged at the moment? Joshua, maybe we'll start with you.
Social media, coming on BFM is one of it.
They're not drinking your coffee, but they're engaged. Okay.
No, I mean, we've been around. We've been around as a coffee brand. So clearly, a lot of personal touch to reach out. Not many people know that we do a lot of B2B businesses other than being a consumer retail brand. So we do supply coffee to corporations and companies and cafes and things like that. So there's a lot of personal messaging and touch going on. But I also want to jump in a little bit to what Dato said about remote working. You see, the gig economy has been around, but people kind of equate that with the Grab riders and the Grab drivers and all that. But back to the ones they said not much help has been given in this stimulus package for the 4,000 to 8,000 salary range. There's a lot of these functions, people who are earning in this kind of income, they could potentially be hooked onto a gig economy platform. Maybe more of that will surface as we go along in the coming years, simply because companies can now pay variably according to job done. And then the people who are working, they can do multiple jobs because they are in a gig economy, the more skilled ones. So yeah, there are gig economy platforms around the world. Malaysia has one called GigX Global. Yeah.
Right. Thanks, Joshua.
Okay. This is a question from Jen Lee to Tiam Hock. Would this be a viable time to approach private equity for capital injection?
Okay. I better qualify. Jen Lee is my son. So it's 5X Capital. He's asking me to promote 5X Capital on board. Seriously, there's a lot of SMEs who is going to need require funding.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. When your cash reserves are depleted, and then it comes to a matter of survival, then you need fresh injection of capital.
Right.
Nothing else. You just cash. Pure cash needs to be injected into the business to make it sustainable. So I think the VCs and the private equities will be like vultures in 4 to 6 months' time. And I can tell you the SMEs will not get the kind of valuations that they want, which in the first place was not viable. Okay? Going by a lot of these expectations and stuff like that. So I think it will come down to a much more realistic, level where the investors can coexist with the founder of the company.
Just to interrupt you for a while, Tiam Hock, do you think there is a lot of liquidity in the market at the moment in terms of VC cash and all that?
I know the PEs have a lot. Private equity have a lot. Okay? VCs, because they are more involved with startups, right? So there's still no visibility of profitability, so to speak. So they have a much larger questions to ask now. Private equity goes for existing business which have been profitable before, right? So they know if this business can survive after 6 months, then it's viable for us to go in now on a proper PE basis, right? On a proper valuation, a realistic valuation that they can make some money after 5 years, So I think a PE would be a good bet for businesses that are already in existence because they are more willing to work with you. They are able to assist you a bit more. Right. Whereas the VCs, they are in the valuation game. And the next 2-3 years, the valuation game won't happen. okay, it's going to be a very, very much subdued valuation game going on. So the valuation game, I find it a bit more tougher in terms of people hoping to resell because, you know, you have expanded your customer base and stuff like that, but still making losses, right? A lot of companies have grown wise to it already.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Here's a question, Yue to Joshua. What's your view on delivery services charging close to 30% margin to F&B businesses right now?
I don't want to step on any of the two big boys' toes.
Yeah. But that's why no names to mention. Yeah.
But the reality is, it is a duopoly, right?
Right.
So, but let's hear the story from the other side as well. I don't think we are all entrepreneurs. If we know how to calculate our numbers, I think we can guess that they are not going through such a great time as well. Hear both sides of the story. Clearly, on our side, I don't need to say that we are losing money giving 30% away. Definitely, we are losing money giving 30% away through deliveries. It's just doing it to have the cash flow coming in. But on the other side, there is more than meets the eye. So those numbers needs to tally as well, I guess. But maybe immediately after the MCO or within the next 3 to 6 months, that model has to be relooked more into details with that.
Okay. I've got a very interesting question here from Morshidi, and I open to all. For those who are cash rich, what will be the plans and strategies to boost the business during this difficult time?
Keep your cash in the bank. Don't do anything.
Mr. Tan?
Maybe let that to talk first.
I lost it, guys. For those who are cash rich, right? What would be a great way to boost your business right now for those who are cash rich?
Well, I would think that put where the focus very much on the digital transformation stuff, because digital transformation used to be is a smart strategy, but in today's context, it is your survival. So I think the key really now is how do you leverage on the digital transformation platforms to be able to focus on protecting your revenue as well as to grow your revenue and to scale this case here.
Okay.
So I would think that would be essentially very key at this point.
Okay. You fade in and out. This is again from Michael, Dato. Do you foresee the foreign SME sector as the biggest new potential clients for further outsourcing?
Yes. That has been, the last year or so, that has been our targets for potential outsourcing. The reasons, again, as I've also mentioned that as we moved into the whole, because of our specializations in the customer management space, so essentially, people are now moving into the digital space. But a lot still do not have their internal capabilities or even the ready infrastructure to be able to market and increase their revenue. To depend on a outsourcing parties like us able to do this very quickly will actually help to leverage and help to the clients to actually go to the market faster.
Okay. I want to talk about, we talk about the resilient leader, right? What is the kind of messaging that you're giving your employees at the moment, and what should the message kind of messaging be when you talk about being resilient leaders? We'll start with you first, Joshua.
We will tell our staff that, hey, we can get through this together. We are in this together. I mean, just as you are suffering, we are suffering. So let's look at creative ways to help all of us out.
So a lot of people are talking about either retrenchment or unpaid leave or what we call that, you know, stuff like that. But we are thinking more along the lines of deferment. So if all of us can take a bit of a tie our waist a little bit, you know, when things get better, let's all share in the prosperity again together, you know. And on that note, we don't just talk, but I paid my staff in full on March. I think a lot of F&B operators did that, but with the most mixed feeling ever when I approved those payments. Mm. But we said, hey, this is a sincere gesture from us. We have no, half of the month is no sales, but let's do this, and then let's weather the storm together. And in case we don't, right? Let's see how I can help you out in securing other means of income and revenue. Yeah.
Dato?
I guess we are more VUCA than ever. I mean, everybody is talking about VUCA, but we are now in the real VUCA world itself. And I believe resilient leadership comes into play, right? So what we constantly communicating with my staff, it's really to be able to see this as a temporary setback and not seeing it as like, you know, it's going to go forever. And to actually maintain a positive attitude and mindset to explore opportunities within the crisis situation itself here. So it's that solution mindset. Mm-hmm. And finding ways of how we can move forward and avoiding being stuck as to where we are today itself here. So we need to supercharge our communication. We need to put a lot of empathy and the ability to listen to people. In fact, this Saturday, I'm going to have a virtual CEO breakfast with my people. So I think the ongoing communication, that human touch becomes very key in like this, because we did a pulse prior to the CEO dialogue, is that people are worried. So the question is, what is it that they're worried about? Is it, the COVID-19, the concern about being infected, or are they concerned about, you know, job security and stuff like that? So I guess the supercharging your communication and that empathy and humanity needs to come into play.
Right. I'm sure mental health is going to be something, on most people's minds as well.
Yeah, indeed.
Mr. Tan?
Some of my businesses I've staffed with worked with me for 20 years, 30 years. So, you know my stand on that, in the sense that if we can, we always try to keep everybody employed. Good times, we give more. We used to give 4-6 months bonus, when we had a very good year. And when it's bad year, we don't give bonus, we give 1 month at least. Normally, even if it's a bad year, we still give 1 month. Because they need to buy school books, for the children and stuff like that. So end of the year is very important. Sometimes Raya is very important when you have a lot of Malay staff, right? Same thing here now, it's just those staff that insist that they should be paid full, right? You will get a certain segment of staff who will be the rebel rousers, right? And that's why I write in my article, because my friend is from a very big entrepreneur, and he says, if I tell them I'm going to cut their salary by 50% because they are in the service industry, they will leave, they will not agree to it. So I say, what can you do if they want to leave on their own free will?
Right.
Because, we are facing a situation where you cannot afford to absorb losses for 6 straight months. And big losses. Small losses, fine, So, this is a crunch. It's a time of reckoning.
I'm going to ask one more question to Thiam Hock, and then I'm going to close off with one final question to everybody. But this is a question, Thiam Hock, and others feel free to chip in. What's your view of the wellness industry for the next 6 months?
Wellness.
Yeah.
You're talking about what? Gym, spas?
I guess. Well, whatever your view may be around that.
I think the fear of COVID is going to be very real, right?
Mm.
Right? So, you know, like if you want to go for a massage, my wife is worried, you know. Oh, the masseur have massaged before, right? Mm. And it's in the gym is now, you know, people get infected in gyms because of the, you know, sweats and everything is on the machines and everything, and then you're going to touch it, right? So it's going to be really, really tough. So unless they have very strict sanitation, you know, sanitizing after everything, and you know, so unless you're assured that it's relatively safe, then only people will come back to it. So the wellness industry, you know, you have to. I mean, you can't prevent a haircut, right?
Yes.
Right? You will definitely have to go for a haircut.
Yeah.
Those of you who use facials, you will have to go for your facials, yeah. Right? So then you better check, you know, ask your beautician to go and do a COVID check. So right. They will have to test themselves. So I see the potential of this rapid kit testing, to be constantly available to the mass public, especially the establishments, and so that we can all practice safe habits, you know. And you need to constantly test yourself. So maybe we need to test our staff once a week, right? And the rapid test kit is not expensive, right? If there's volume, you can bring it up to $100, $200, that kind of stuff. And you can do it, you know, organizations and clinics can do for your staff and things like that. So that might be worth the trouble to do it just to have better safety standards, so to speak.
Yeah. I think people will probably, you know, focus on getting supplements to stay healthy. Okay, a final question, right? April 14th, supposed to be the end of MCO, but let's look at your message if it gets extended to April 28th or even mid-May, right? You know, final words, advice, final considerations that we should look into. Joshua, maybe we can start with your thoughts before we conclude.
I mean, we are here discussing about businesses and recovery for businesses. But in the greater scheme of things, I feel in the end, lives are at stake here, literally, physically, medically, and all that. We have to ask ourselves what are the priorities. So psychologically, let's prepare ourselves for, I think that the DG of health has always been saying this, we prepare for the worst, but we hope for the best. So hence, psychologically prepare, even as businesses prepare for a longer period of MCO, screen out all the noise. Let's just be a voice and not a noise in amidst all these things that is happening. Truly, we need to look forward, lah. We need to look forward with optimism. Otherwise, you wallow in misery. You can't change anything anyway. So, for me, as entrepreneurs, let's look forward. Let's look forward.
Right. Okay. And have processes in place. Dato.
Well, I would look at it that you know, providing the financial assistance by the government at this point to tide most of our businesses. It's primarily a life supporting action, but it will not give us the stability or the sustainability in this case here. So what we really need to do now is to be able to ensure that the country is in a productive mode, right? So to ensure that the financial sustainability is not only to the nation, but to the rakyat in totality itself here. My message to the listeners, especially if you're an entrepreneur, don't wait. Don't wait for this assistance, because you need to essentially take charge and take control of the situation. So you need to start innovating, be creative in the way that we do our business today. I remember what Jack Ma essentially says, if you never try, you will never ever know if there's any chances out here. So you just need to remain focused. Anything is possible. And always remember that tough times don't last. It's the tough people do.
Mm. Mr. Tan, your wise words.
No wise, lives versus livelihoods. Right?
Yeah.
It's really a question of lives versus livelihood.
Correct.
And whether the cure is, you know, going to cost more than the, you know, than the problem itself. You look at it, MCO extended another 2 weeks, and then they will announce probably another 2 weeks, and then they'll see the situation. And I doubt they can stop it. They will probably move another 2 weeks into May, because there are many clusters from the public side that they have not enough testing done. So they have to increase the testing. So you take another 2 weeks to peak, right? Then they will tell you to stay home another 2 weeks just to let it go down. So what do you do in between, you know, now? You can't just leave it as it is. Some form of economic activities have to be resumed, right? Or else we all die.
Yeah.
Because if this MCO keeps extending on, right? So the thing is, it's back to the businesses to practice safety in their workplace, right? So for instance, factories, right? You cut down half the team, but they are isolated in their factory. So if they test their workers, you know, they take the temperatures every day, they test them for COVID and everything it is, right? And if they are sick or they are having fever, go home, you know, don't come and infect the others. But they can isolate in within their factory. So we should allow, you know, resumption of services. It's the public places like restaurants and everything, malls, that's much more difficult to manage, right? So we are talking about, like Singapore was talking about, you know, half the restaurant, you know, 1 meter of space, right? Half the restaurant space and stuff like that. Offices, same thing. If you practice safety procedures, you don't see many clusters from offices, right?
Right.
It's all caused by this, and then it affects the whole nation. So we need to isolate these problems where we need to do the MCO on them, right? And then the rest of it, we have to allow some resumption of economic activities.
Right.
So or we all die anyway. So
lives versus livelihood. Thanks for being with us. With Tan Tiam Ho, Dr. Munira Lui, and also Joshua Liu in our topic, Race to Recovery. Thanks for being with us. You've been watching BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.